We are reopening the meeting. We managed to get the senior person from appropriations who has been highly focused on the SOEs across Parliament. And so, on that note, I want to apologise on behalf of the committee to the Minister. And this will be done now in 2 minutes, Minister. And I think what we need is you've got to invest and tell members the secret of your stamina, you see, so that their health is staying on board. You know, and I'm sure your own department has already learned that, and probably you shared the secret with them. All right. So we are right here. We have the chairperson himself. And may I welcome you, Chairperson Sigoni, of the Standing Committee of Appropriations. You're very welcome, and you've just earned the gratitude of trade and industry. And as a matter of fact, they've come now in full force, very much like the DA did the other day, you know, with a few extra people coming in. But this time it's just to pass a report, Mr. James. Right. So I've asked, I don't know where she is because I'm not so good, but what she has done is to put what we discussed overhead. You can just read that.
Any additional budgetary requirements, I would say existing in the term determining existing and any additional.
Mindful of the overarching view we've got now.
Slightly different from what Honourable James asked for.
Oh, well, if you can just edit that then, Honourable James, quickly, we want to pass it now.
Well, in determining existing and additional budgetary requirements.
James, you've got to go slowly over that existing. In determining. English is back on track. Was it English your specialty, was it, Honourable James, or was it education broadly? No, seriously.
Your question, Madam Chair.
Expertise. Remember some in the distant past. Was it English?
No, it's, I'm trained as a demographer.
Demographer, right. So the English was just an additional sideline. Thank you. Right. Members, we now put this report before you. Can we please have a mover to propose the adoption? Honourable Mabasa?
Correct, Chair. I move that the committee adopts the report.
We have a seconder, please. Honourable James. Thank you. Right. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for your application to this top. And we can now quickly adopt the agenda at the same time. The agenda was opening and welcome apologies, the SOE's briefing on the budget. The times are a little wrong. We're going to be very, very sharp, to the point, no preambles today, so that we finish at 12, 12:15 at the latest. Thank you. So can we have somebody to move the adoption of the agenda? Honourable Khadir.
Sir, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Honourable Jordan Hill Lewis. Right, now that was the way we'd like to do business, and including the attendance arrivals, etc. Right, thank you, Honourable Mashiko. Thank you, Honourable Sigoni. Unless you want to, Honourable Sigoni, listen to the budget. Now, because I know Honourable Mashiko is rushing to the airport to run another meeting there, but let's just proceed. Right. So, members, thank you. And Minister Davies, we are finally, after you've been here an hour, thank you very much, and my apologies again. Over to yourself.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the presentation will be done by the DG, and it is on the strat plan and the performance plan, or the performance report. And I think that what's going to be important today is that the committee will have a chance to look at the administrative performance in a little more detail of the department over the past year, and how we intend to move forward in the MTF period. I just want to say that we often, when we meet, and I'm just going to say a few general highlights and then let the report happen from the DG, as I said, but very often we discuss the policy issues but not the administrative performance, and I think it gives us an opportunity to focus on that. Having said that, let's just say that the flagship program of the Department of Trade and Industry, arising from our particular contribution to the new growth path, is in the area of the promotion of industrial development and industrialization. I think we have already exhausted the arguments in the committee as to why that is important. There has never been a case anywhere at any time in economic history of any country which has moved from being a developing or underdeveloped economy to becoming a developed economy that does not have a manufacturing sector and value-added activities driving that process. I think a number of developed countries that have lost industrial capacity are now ruining the day when they allowed that to go in the name perhaps of specializing in derivative trading or funny money transactions in the financial sector. That's the focus. And in that regard, I think I should just record, because we've discussed the main directions of our industrial policy work, is that, first of all, manufacturing in South Africa remains seriously affected by the economic crisis. We have not recovered to the extent of where we were before the onset of the economic crisis. But 2011 did see an improvement in production. It did see a general increase in overall production of about 7.5%, and I'd be happy to share this data with the committee if you like. We saw a stabilization of employment in 2011. But what is interesting in the analysis in the document, which I'm happy to share with the committee, is that it shows that the subsectors which were the subject of particular programs by the DTI did better than those that were not. And I think that is telling us an important story. So as we move forward, and just to say the IPAP, the next iteration of the IPAP, is in the midst of going through its processes, and I'm confident that we will be able to launch it at the start of the financial year, table it in Parliament, as we have done every year up to now. The next iteration, it will seek to build on and relate to the very, very important work of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission, which has set a framework for the infrastructure program. It will also build on the lessons we've learned from the clothing industry production incentive, and so the MCEP, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, will be seeking to try to encourage, work with enterprises to enhance their competitiveness, because we think that's the only way forward. It's not to sit out a period of stagnation and hope for better times. It's actually to do the work now to prepare for better times, and indeed that is the only recipe for survival moving further forward. So the MCEP is one of our key programs. We've got the SEZ bill, which is now well into the consultation on our side, well into the next steps, which will eventually lead to it being tabled in Parliament. And also then, as I mentioned before, one of the new elements which is going to come out is that on the African continent, in terms of our approach to regional integration, and that is everything from SACU, SADC, the tripartite, and even the continental, everybody is realizing that what Africa needs is to promote industrial development, and that we need to cooperate to promote industrial development, and that that has to be a key leg of a development integration approach on the African continent. And so you will see that in the next iteration of IPAP, there will be a section that deals in particular with that. So I think the IPAP is moving ahead. A lot of the budget which is available, and the increased budget that has been made available to the DTI, is to support particular programs. Now, these programs are managed and designed and implemented by a division which I think very often doesn't get a lot of prominence, but it's called the Enterprise Organization. And I think it's very important that the committee follows closely the work of the Enterprise Organization. For example, the report will tell you that 21.1 billion rand of investments, worth of investment, was facilitated by the 12I tax incentive. Now, that happened through work which was done in TIA. So what happens is that we have to set criteria, we have to have adjudication against applications, we have to design the incentive of the MCEP, and it is our objective that this incentive will be available and ready, will be understood and then can be applied for very soon after the start of the new financial year, which is next month. We don't want to have a long delay. And so the turnaround time, the efficiency, the effectiveness of these programs is very much part of the bread and butter work of the DTI. And I think it's important that you pay some attention to that, because we are also interested in making sure that the management of the incentives happens efficiently, that there aren't big delays. And I think you'll see most of the indicators are indicating that there is some progress on that. On the trade front, I think you'll see both the report and the movement ahead. We are, generally speaking, we've said this before, our priority is Africa, African integration. It's then our relationship with BRICS and the discussion which will happen the week after next in the BRICS summit about the laying the foundations of the intra-BRICS cooperation program. You will also see that there's quite a bit of work which is going on in other fast-growing emerging economies, the GCC and ASEAN I've already mentioned. They are also, I think, because of the changing nature of the world economy, the conditions, we can come to this in questions if people want, I think the conditions are a bit more favorable for us to be able to come out with an agreement on this long-standing discussion of the European Union on EPAs, which is acceptable and meets the various requirements that we've put down, and that's one of the objectives that we've indicated. In the area of enterprise and empowerment division, we have said that the SMME program, I mentioned this in response to a member's statement in Parliament the other day, we have been focusing on the incubators because we have been saying what we really need to do is to try to promote real productive entrepreneurship in South Africa. Out of all the various programs that we've been running which have been most effective in this regard, the ones we have identified are incubation. And that's also the international experience. And the problem we've got in South Africa is we've just got too few of them. And so actually the division has identified 31 programs that we've been involved in, but there's a further 28 which are currently in the pipeline that are being worked on. And you'll see the objective is in the MTF period to roll that up even further. And we're also looking to partnerships with the private sector to roll the number up considerably more than that again. In the also some of the changes we make to the BEE Act, that is the consultation period is over. We will be bringing the bill in the near future to Parliament, and also the changes in the code will be put out for public comment in the near future. Then the other piece of legislation which is well on its way to come into Parliament is the Cooperatives Amendment Bill. In fact, you'll find there are two bills. Don't get confused by that. That's one of them deals with matters of intergovernmental relations. It has to be tagged 76, the other one 75, so that's the reason for that. But you will find that there will be the two bills plus a revised strategy document, which we are looking to create the foundations for a more effective program to support cooperatives. We've also been trying to, in our discussions internally, we've been talking about what does it mean to break down silos. And I think what it doesn't mean is that everybody from every division has to attend every meeting, but it does mean that we have to open doors so that there can be exchanges between people in different divisions. And so, for example, we try to make the discussion between the cooperative promotion activity and the industrial development much more seamless, so that opportunities for cooperative development in the IPAP, in particular around agro-processing opportunities, can be identified and can be used as the basis for promoting cooperatives. I think there's also another area which is quite often not given enough prominence. That's our work on supporting and promoting industrial innovation. There is a sort of division of labor with science and technology. Science and technology does the research, and it is our job to promote the industrial innovation of that. And sometimes there's some quite interesting innovations which do emerge and are supported by our programs, and many of them are not necessarily major new scientific insights, but they are adaptations, improvements, and so on, applications which do improve competitiveness and so on. Then I think the other area for today is perhaps our focus is around the broad area of administration, financial management, agency management. This is the work that is in the realm of GSSSD, the Group COO, and the Chief Financial Officer. And here I think most of the indicators that will be presented for the achievement in the report for the last year are showing movement in the right direction, I would contend. But a few things that we have picked out that we need to focus our attention on are that while we are working on things like retention strategies and things of that sort, we actually need to think a little bit more clearly about succession strategies. I think the department is a little thin on the top, not too obvious. I said to the team once we had a video conference, and they were sitting up in Pretoria. I said, if the bomb went off over where you are, I don't know where we would be. It was the executive board. I think that would be the problem. Is that we need to think about who's the next layer that can be the pool from which the next generation of leaders can come up. The second one is around some of the matters of agency management. Maybe it's a little bit of an overlap with what you were discussing earlier on. I don't know where an SOE stops and an agency begins, but a lot of these entities, we've actually found that many of the problems that we have, and I'm sure they will come, you'll get information, are not of what can I say? Should I just say naughtiness? That emerge don't really come from inside the department. They come from inside agencies. And so one of the things that we have decided to do is we're putting in place, and we're about to sign off on this in the very near future, set of firewalls that any tender that is issued by any agency, even though the boards and everything have got their powers, certain value, we have to inform us. Higher value, we have to consult with us. So we don't find ourselves in a situation that this tender was awarded and now becomes a bit of a scandal or something like that. We don't want to find ourselves in that situation. So that's one of the things that we will be introducing. And the other one is we are reflecting quite seriously ourselves on this question of agentization of the state. Why are some of these entities agencies when the equivalent agency is a division in the department? And in particularly some of the regulatory agencies. So we're asking ourselves some questions about that. And I think we're going to be proposing, and we'll have to go through, some of it might require legislative changes and things like that, but to bring some of them or restructure some of them as divisions of the department rather than standalone agencies with boards and whatever. And so that's a piece of work which is also ongoing. So I think... let me just stop those with just a few highlights, and I think that the detailed report and presentation can now be given by the DG with your permission.
Thank you, Minister. I should just indicate that while we thanked you and the DG for being here, we also want to thank all the DDGs for being here, COOs, CFOs, your senior members of support staff, plus everyone else, who some of them describe themselves as back room. They sometimes are the most important in the back room. Thanks. But over to yourself, DG, Mr. October.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. As indicated by the Minister, I will take you through the detail of our strategic strategic plan, and the issues I'll cover in the presentation is really to highlight just a quick summary of the key achievements in the past year, and then our key interventions for 2012-2013, and then just look at our budget that was allocated to us and how we intend to use that budget. Just again to recap, and as the Minister indicated, it's important that we always put the vision here, because all our work, as indicated, is guided by our overarching objective of building a dynamic industrial economy. And you will see then throughout our programs and our strategic focus, we always come back to the arena of trying to build our manufacturing base. So our area besides industrialization, a very important part of our work is in the area of trade and investment and trade. As you know, our economy has a very small domestic market, and to build our manufacturing sector, external demand is a major factor. But also, we're also trying to build our an inclusive, productive sector, because, as you know, aggregate demand is very low in the economy, a very small entrepreneurial base that we have, a very small middle class, and part of the broadening participation is to broaden the base of the economy. So those are our strategic focus areas, and all our work, which I will go through in detail then, is clustered into these five programs of the department. The one is, as we indicated, the industrial development work, trade, investment and exports, broadening participation and regulation, and then the issue of administration. So those are our five core areas which will be reflected then in our budget. And as you will see in our budget, the heart and the core of our program is the first point around industrial development. So very quickly, Madam Chair, I've taken you through to the third quarter report already, so I will go very quickly through the part of our achievements for the past year. I think the major point we want to make under industrial development is that our program, since the adoption of the policy action plan, we've gained quite some traction with regard to some of the programs. So we've leveraged the procurement and set the basis there with the designation of five sectors, and it's listed there. But as you can see, it is labor-intensive sectors that we have done in our initial phase of designation. We've also started leveraging off the infrastructure program through the PRASA agreement. And then, as I indicated, the programs that have taken traction, and the flagship one is in the automotive sector, where I think we've consolidated the presence of our multinationals by securing significant investments in the automotive sector. And then also we launched and started implementing our renewable energies initiative. We launched the SARI, an efficiency program, new regulations and so on. But really, in the past year, we have started moving into the renewable energy space. Then again, the other programs that have taken traction is the film incentive. There was quite, as you can see there, we leveraged up to $2 billion of investment, and 67 productions were supported. That program is having traction. Similarly, if I can take you then to the bottom one, is the business processing services. There again, we have secured significant investments and $4 billion of new investment under the business processing. So as I indicated, under industrial development, our core programs, automotive, BBS, film and television, and then finally, as the Minister indicated, the 12I program came into effect. It's about 12 months running, and in that 12 months, we've signed off on 13 projects and leveraged $21 billion, a range of international investments included in that 13 projects. So I think, as I said, we've laid some foundation now for upscaling, which I'll come to later on around industrial development. Then turning to just some of our sort of achievements in the area of trade and investment, the EMEA program is supporting a large number of firms. As you can see, we've supported over 800 firms in that. We've also, our investment pipeline is growing, and we've secured some major international investors, and the most prominent being Nestle and Unilever. We've also done a range of business delegations. We've taken companies, the most being to African markets, and then also we did a major trip with over 70 companies to China in last year. We've, in addition, still on the issue of trade and investment, we've also completed the list of 10 products that we're targeting, value-added products, so that we change the structure of trade with China. That was also completed in last year. And then I think finally, I think members participated in that as well, was our ongoing input and interventions into the WTO and Doha process. So that covers that. As I said, I'll be very quick. In the area of broadening participation, we finalized the SMME review report, and as I said, one of the core recommendations coming out of that was support for incubators and cooperatives. As the Minister already indicated, we've completed the review of the BEA Act and codes, and we've also nearing completion on the Saldana IDZ. That's quite far advanced, and we hope early in the new financial year we will be able to launch the Saldana IDZ. And then in the other programs where we've gained traction is on the cooperative schemes and the Black Business Supplier Development Program, which are relatively new schemes in the department, and there it lays out our support for over 300 for under cooperatives and under the Black Business Supplier Development Program. Then turning to the regulation, I think the Minister's covered this already, but as you can see, we've got a busy year ahead of us because we will be coming with the cooperatives, Black Empowerment, SEZs will be coming, and then we were also looking at, and I think you're familiar with this work, but we'll be dealing with issues of the gambling legislation for the lotteries, also intellectual property and so forth. So I think you're very familiar with the regulation program of the past year. Then finally, in terms of rounding off on our achievements for the year, as you know, we set a big objective around the vacancy. And again, we're heading at least in the right direction. We've brought it down now from over 16%. Mr. Sogoni will be will notice the progress since we last visited his committee, and we're down to under 10% now, and we will then set out in the new year our new objective, but at least we're heading in the right direction. Also in terms of the empowerment of women, we've made progress by 43% of our senior management being women, and hopefully we'll hit over the 50% mark soon. And then also, as we said, in terms of payments to small businesses, DTI is the champion of this legislation and of this objective of paying our creditors within 30 days. We're trying to be at the front, and in the year, 92% of our payments are done within 10 days, and we're trying to constantly improve that objective of paying SMEs on time. So, Madam Chair, that is just a very quick glance over the past 12 months, and as I said, in the new year, it's really to start building on these programs. And the first one we're building on, as I said, is really we now can in a position to upscale our industrial policy action plan. And as indicated by the Minister in the start of the financial year in April, we will present to you the revised iteration of IBAP. We will also continue our work around the designations. We have set a minimum of 3 new sectors in addition to the 5 that we promulgated in December. We will look at designating new sectors under the triple PFA. Then we will continue our program around human resource development, technology development, and this the SPI program, which is our innovation program. That will be continued. We will also continue the work. As I said, the basis has been laid around the automotive incentive scheme. And as you know, we're adding now the medium and taxi industry is going
going to be us building a local sector, and that automotive program will roll out, and we will continue the 12i scheme, which we indicated earlier. We will also, I think the other programs listed there is in our strategic plan. We just set very specific targets, number of enterprises we hope to support, the number of the level of investment we hope to leverage, and it's set out in our strategic plan for all our programs. The new ones then, as I said, it will be coming into effect very early in the new financial year. It's the Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Program. We are busy finalizing the rules, procedures, adjudication structures for that. And as I said, one element of that will mainly be aimed at vulnerable sectors of the economy which are affected by the global downturn. Also, we want to support renewable energy. That's the Green Enterprise Competitive Program. That will also be part of the Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Package. So really the only completely new incentive scheme we're adding for the year is the Manufacturing Enhancement Program. Then, moving on from industrial development, again, our key work areas with regard to trade, as Minister indicated, our focus centrally is going to be the continent because it's the fastest growing, but it's also the most fast growing market for our manufactured exports, and also for all of our investment is now targeting not only the South African market but the African market. So that agenda, as I said, we will continue our work within SACU, within SADC, really trying to extend the integration process, and then the SDI, the Spatial Development Initiative programs. Again, as indicated, we hope to, under this MTF period, bring the EPA EU trade negotiations to finality, and then also the work will intensify around the tripartite free trade area. And as you know, the target we set there was 3 years, and so this is the first year of that program, and we will be participating fully and actively in that process. And as I said, we've set a target then of, in terms of our investment pipeline, of 45 billion rands of investment. Then, turning from trade and investment, we turn to, as I said, the broadening participation. We've set now clear targets for our small business support program, and as indicated, the focus is really going to be about incubation and facilitating small business into the supply chains of major companies, and that is why you can see we lay out establishing the 44 incubators in the next financial year. Some of it will be standalone DTI CEDA incubators, the others will be partnerships with the major private sector companies like Sasol, Anglo, Vodacom, and others. We are partnering with them so that we can leverage off the private sector to multiply the amount of incubators we have. And then the others are laid out there. The other programs, as I said, are existing programs which we are just upscaling, which is the Enterprise Investment Program. That is the big program where we provide grants to the manufacturing, to the small business sector. We will also still be carrying on with the tourism support program, although over time this program will be handed over to tourism, where they will fully run the tourism part, and we will then focus exclusively on manufacturing. The targets are set out for you there, and set out in our strategic plan. The other initiative we will be focusing on is the set aside, the 10 products, that is for small business. Here we trying to, as I said, increase demand for the products of small business. I think what the review shows is that apart from government grants and loans, the real need that small business have is somebody to buy their products, whether it be government or the larger companies. But really, it's to increase the demand for the output of small business, and that's why we will be, as I said, giving attention to setting aside some portion of government products for SMEs. Again, it was mentioned we will be finalizing and hopefully completing the amendments to the Black Economic Empowerment. And as indicated by the Minister, the main thrust of that will be to shift the core of BEE to enterprise development, procurement, and productive enterprise rather than just passive shareholders. That's going to be the focus of the Act. We also, with regard to broadening participation, as I said, we're going to finalize the strategy and framework for gender and women's economic empowerment. We've targeted 60 new projects where we will support women-owned enterprises. Then, as I indicated, there's the upscaling of the cooperative incentive scheme, where we are now setting clear targets for that. As I said, many of these schemes really target the informal sector or the second economy, and it really is, and as I said, it's a very new program, but we have now developed the model for rolling out incentives to the cooperative and the sector. We also want to finalize in the new financial year the informal sector strategy. As we indicated, the issue of marginalization is part of the problems why we don't have an integrated, balanced economy. So we will be finalizing a very clear strategy and then again develop specific programs to support the informal sector. And then also, as indicated, the youth make up the bulk of the unemployed, and therefore we need a specific program targeting youth, and we will be finalizing a strategy around youth enterprise development as well. So, Madam Chair, that is really around the question of broadening our economic base and having an inclusive economy. So I've dealt with the main ones, and then the final one before getting to administration is really to look at regulations. And again, these are the ones we hope to complete in the year. I mean, the one new area is intellectual property. Our intellectual property regime needs to be modernized and updated, and therefore that area will, after we've now completed the company's legislation and that is in place, we will be giving much more focus on intellectual property. And then, as indicated, we will also be doing regulatory impact assessments, and that is really to ensure that our regulations are appropriate. As I said, we don't want to be over or under regulated, and that is why those assessments will be done. Then we're also looking at the amendments to the Business Act, which we'll be processing, and the zones have already been mentioned. If I can just say that alongside, whilst we're working on finalizing the regulations on SEZs, we are simultaneously working on launching and expanding the number of SEZs. So we're not waiting for the legislation to be completed. As I said, in the current year, we will definitely be launching the Saldanha IDZ. And we have a Saldanha IDZ. We will also, with all the other provinces who don't have IDZs, we are commencing feasibility studies to identify SEZs in all the provinces. So that will go alongside the regulations. Then finally, in terms of our interventions, as I said, all these programs, you need a dynamic and hopefully world-class organization to be implementing these programs. And that's why the question of our retaining, developing our staff is key. As I said, we've got a new target which we're setting for vacancy. We're currently at 8%, and we want to then, over by the end of that new financial year, ensure that we bring it down to 5% vacancy rate. Also to bring down our staff turnover rate, and then we also set targets for disability and for women in senior management positions. And as I said, we will have the targets for a supply development program. And then in terms of our outreach program, which as I said is very key to taking DTI to the people, we'll have 12 publications which will be done, and then 80. We've set a target of 80 initiatives, outreach, explaining DTI's policies, programs, incentives, and so forth. So let's just look then at the resources, as you can see. In terms of the budget, we have, our budget now is now shifted to 9 billion. And as I said, there's been a 32% increase in our budget, which will mainly, as you see, The core of our program is the industrial development, policy development, $1.4 billion, and then the TAO, the enterprise organization which was mentioned, is the $5.4 billion. Most of the increase is really in the area of incentives for the manufacturing sector, hence the increased budget. And as you can see there, we move from 9 to 10 billion. The other additions that we received is for the special economic zones, where we received additional funding. So that is our budget. As you can see, the main areas where we are, and as I said, it's mainly to incentivize private sector investments. Madam Chair, is our budget for the period. And then just to conclude, then we just thought we should highlight in terms of implementing our program the remaining challenges we face. And really the biggest challenge is that, as you know, all of our companies have relied on the European and U.S. markets for the bulk of our exports. And given that this problem is likely to carry on, but Europe will grow slowly for the next few years. So that's why we have put in place the manufacturing enhancement program, whilst we allow companies to diversify both onto the continent but also into Asia, Middle East markets, and the fast-growing markets. So that's what really the impact of the recession is still with us, and we will keep an eye on that. The other challenges we faced, as you know, is really the increase in administrative prices, especially electricity and port charges. While there's been some progress on that area, it is still a challenge to the manufacturing sector. And finally, I think the problem, as we upscale the manufacturing sector, the question of skill shortages will be a challenge which hopefully we will be able to address. So, Madam Chair, that then is the presentation of our strategic plan. Thank you.
Well, Minister and DG, thank you very, very much. It was indeed very succinct, focused, which helps us, of course, as well. And we always appreciate a few slides and the capacity to speak to them and so on, rather than to have 100 slides. So thank you very, very much for that. We're now looking at the members now, and with the budget situation, and one does like to allow a little bit of ease, flexibility with time, but that doesn't include preambles. If we can get an indication, Honourable James, Honourable Hadebe, Honourable Jordan Hill Lewis, Honourable Albert, and Honourable Van der Merwe. In that order, please. And while we would try to aim for about 2 to 3 minutes, let's try and have an element of understanding, but let's not have 5 questions from one person. Yes, well, I'd like to thank you once again, Chairperson Sigoni from the Standing Committee on Appropriations, for joining us.
Thank you. Am I allowed 3 questions in 1 minute, Chair?
You have your 2 minutes. I know you're very, very short.
All right. I certainly will be short. I have 3 questions. The first has to do with consumer protection, and I was disturbed that when it came to the Walmart transaction, that the consumer protects the voice of consumers, in fact, quite muted. Because clearly Walmart is good for consumers, it's not necessarily good for producers. But the issue around consumer protection and its place in your budget and your work, I think I raise it now as a question. I'd like to know how you propose to strengthen that. The second question is to do with cooperatives. I learned the other day that if you took the asset value of all cooperatives in the world, it is the same as the GNP of Canada, which is the fifth largest economy in the world. And the place of cooperatives in our society needs to expand massively. So I'm very impressed that you're dealing with this. If you think about credit unions, for example, and the role of credit unions, and how you draw on community assets in order to expand cooperatives. So just a comment that I think it's fabulous that you're focusing on this. And my third question has to do with the proposed piece of legislation that hasn't reached the president's desk, I believe, the signature, to do with intellectual property. And my understanding is that that piece of that bill ought to be returned to Parliament because it is a dinosaur as it presently is drafted. And so I was just going to ask you, what is your understanding of where that bill is? Because it hasn't reached the president yet. Thank you.
The Honourable James, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I'll concur with you that we had a wonderful presentation here. But I'll go back to the core mandate of CGTI, which is industrialization, Chair. One fact again, I know that I sound like a scratch record, repeating the same thing year after year. The issue of the steel price again, it must be resolved. We promised some time back that this interdepartmental committee should be dealing with that. But as it is still grappling with that, a lot of iron ore is being shipped out of the country. The ore train is being increased so that it is shipped out. And then that one is the antithesis of what we're fighting for. When are going to, is this 32% extra budget that the DTI is getting going to start now creating small mills, steel mills, so that we can beneficiate these raw materials we're having, Chair. And then number two, Chairperson, will be the issue of the financials of the department itself. 32% increment, yes, one hell of an increment. But when you look at the previous, in the previous financial year, Chair, we were going the wrong way in the terms of expenditure. I remember that between 2009, it was 2% under expenditure. And then as we move forward, it was going down. Will this extra 32% going to increase that, or are you having any measures in place to circumvent that thing from happening? So that this money, you know that $1 billion in 2012 and $1 billion in 2013 are two different things. The inflation is going to eat it up. So are we having any plans in place so that we cap this this under expenditure so that this money, this allocation which is being given to us, goes up very quickly? And then the third question, Chair, will be the issue of the films industry. I think that the department must be commended for doing wonderful work around that field. You know, last week I had the opportunity to watch the film Safe House by Denzel Washington. It was so good, It was Cape Town, with a board, CA cars, CY cars, you could see the House of Parliament, you could see everything here. So it was a good marketing strategy. My friends from abroad, from London, they were already phoning me about visiting Cape Town, because that's what they saw around that film. I think that they're doing a wonderful Safe House here, than the Washington, that movie. Yeah, Safe House. No, I think that with these incentives and the environment which the department is creating is very good, because it's not a major star who filmed here in Cape Town. Also, Stephen Segal in the previous year did the same. There are a lot of films which are coming out of the country. I think the wonderful regard, they are doing a good job. But what I'd like to appeal for, what about the local production? Are they being promoted abroad so that the local talent can also be exported? Because sometimes we don't only export products, we also export talent. Because when we export Charlie's Zero, I'm telling you, that's a major investment. So what if those township guys who are actors also be exported? Thank you, Chair.
Case in point there, but a marketing for our guys. Good idea. And then, of course, Honourable Jordan Hill-Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to get into some detail of the actual departmental budget. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, I tried to look on your website and on the website of this particular program. I couldn't find a lot of detail about it. There's an amount of $49.2 million allocated to Insimbi National Tooling Initiative. I'd love to know a little bit about what that actually is, because I really couldn't find out that much about it. Then, I'm a little bit confused about your administration costs, which bizarrely, and I implored you on this, not moaning about it, they go down. down in the next financial year from 640 to 608 million, and then leap right back up again to 720. What is the cause for that seemingly quite big fluctuation in your administration costs? Then, oh yes, there was an amount of around 60 million, 42 plus 14, so about 56, 57.1 million, allocated to improvements, improved conditions of service in the departments. So can you just say a little bit more about what you mean by improved? Is that just salary increases, or what exactly does that refer to? And then finally, just to echo the question that my colleague Dr. James asked about consumer protection, I was actually very seriously considering tabling a formal motion here to request you to please reconsider the budget of the National Consumer Commission to give it the money that it needs. In discussion with the chairperson, we decided that that was not the best course of action. We should rather just have an interaction with you as the department, which I think was right. But I would like to discuss the budget of the NCC in a little bit more detail. This committee's heard many times before that the NCC has got fairly critical budgetary shortages. We've also heard on many occasions the crucial work that they do, and all of us will no doubt agree. And yet they've been allocated 42.6, I think it is, or 4.1 million rand, which is less than, for example, the 76 million rand allocated to your communications department. It would appear to me that the work, the crucial work of the NCC, is far more important than the work of the Departmental Communications Office. So can we just talk a little bit about that budget? Thanks.
Well noted, Honourable Jordan or Lewis, and then we have Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, let me just echo that sentiment. The National Consumer Commission does very important work, and we need to ensure that they get an adequate budget as per their wishes and requirements. Minister, Honourable Minister, Director General, in terms of the RIA reports, you mentioned that there will be 3 reports submitted for regulation on business and economic citizens. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that, what it will entail, and whether you actually also procure RIA reports on every piece of legislation and amendments that you want to process this year and going forward, of course, as well. Then, as far as the film industry is concerned, I also echo the previous sentiment. I think the film industry is very important. It's an industry where you can create jobs quite quickly and easily. People are upskilled also quite easily. And I also would like to know whether you are in consultation with the Minister of Finance regarding possible financial and tax incentives in that regard to grow the economy. And perhaps I can just add that as far as the film safeguard is concerned, it seems that the American actors are quite keen to speak Afrikaans. If you look at Ryan Reynolds, although I think you should require them to come for Afrikaans lessons first, because their pronunciation isn't the best. Just lastly, I see that you're also talking about a legal metrology bill. Can you just explain when that will be tabled and what will be the changes envisaged in this bill and how it will differ from the existing act? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. Yes. And we had Honourable Van der Merwe here.
Thank you, Chair. I think that the Department ought to be congratulated on the budget side. Most departments were getting a haircut, according to the Minister of Finance, and they seem to have got extensions, and I think that is really quite a feat. I think a lot of the extra money is going to be very usefully put into those areas of industrial policy development and industrial and the incentives side as well. But what I would like to ask is, could we have a little bit more information on the North-South corridor that's been much talked about? The President, I understand, leads in the SADC region on that matter, and I'd just like to know whether there are any time frames for that development. I realize there have been a lot of difficulties with the implementation of that very important corridor. But it would seem that it's very relevant in our current infrastructure drive to finalise and develop that corridor. I also want to mention something, and please, I must excuse myself for being late. I had another parliamentary commitment, so it was. I'm sorry that I was late. And if I missed something, please just ignore me. But you talk about a code of good practice for BEE, and I think that's very relevant. There's another question, though, that I think we ought to look at, and that is codes of good business practice for South African companies operating in the rest of Africa. We've talked about that, I know, at some time, and quite often in our engagements with African countries, we discover difficulties with the way in which South African companies behave abroad, and I wonder if there's some thought being given to that. One last little point. The Minister of Higher Education, and indeed the President, and indeed the Minister of Finance, have talked about the desire to develop skills starting in government. And I just want to know a little bit about internship or mentorship programs that the department might have. Thank you very much.
Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you very much, Colleague Chair. My comments will be based more on what the Minister spoke about, because I missed most of what the DG expanded on. When Honourable Member James spoke about cooperatives, Colleague Sue Van der Merwe said, oh, there you have a friend now. So it looks like indeed I do have a friend, and our voice should be stronger, you know, together. So, but the point I wanted to make here is that I think we'll have to go over a prohibiting attitude of thinking cooperatives must be small. Cooperatives must be small, so that even most people, when we speak of cooperatives, they think we are speaking of some small people there selling some bananas there and then changing it into a cooperative form. But let's think big. Yeah, let's think of these big players playing in a cooperative way, because this is also as it does in closing the gap between the rich and the poor. Even across race, you know, we will find that cooperatives will help. And then Minister spoke about beneficiation. It looks like it's critical that the Minister of Higher Education, as well as the Minister of Science and Technology, and Minister Davis, departments, not necessarily in trade and industry, but it's something that all departments must be acutely be aware of, to say, do we know what is going on from up here right up to the lowest paid worker, you know, at all times. Then the last one is on corruption. Because this corruption, we must look at it with respect to BEEs, but we must also look at it with respect to where we talk of highly skilled industries, where we find sophisticated corruption. So the department must always say, what can we do as a department to be ahead? Because these that are embedded with corruption are not going to give up. They will keep on saying, how can we outwit government? But it means the government must also say, in parallel, how can we be a step ahead? And as I said, it's not just on the broad-based ones, but it's also with the big economic players. Thanks.
Is that all of us here? I just thought I had just a couple here myself. So enterprises, stand alones that were being referred to and so on. About, I think it was with reference on page 20, probably, about standalones and also the sort of partnership then with Staple and that kind of thing. Now, what would be of interest to me is with respect to standalones, what would, you know, is the reason that because we don't find partners for these, for whatever reason, to link up, or because we is one of these areas which we do believe we should retain within the department itself. What is the reason behind that, if any? And the other aspect was the gender, woman, and economic empowerment, the national strategic framework one saw there, and then the fund itself. Just how effective is this proving to be? Or is it one of the many cosmetic type of organizations, enterprises, and that kind of thing that one see running around? And one does see perhaps a lot of workshops and hotel meetings and the like, and I'm not talking of DTI, I'm talking generally now, and I'd like to know, you know, what is this we are doing in the DTI effectively with respect to that? And the other one is, we're trying to ensure that government entities have a clear understanding of the priorities of government. They are not doing their own thing and then providing some sort of cozy strat plan with a lot of pictures that seems to create the impression that they run, they're linked with government. As a matter of fact, they're not delivering anything as such in terms of government priorities, but they are delivering on themselves. And with respect to co-ops, well, you know, we have two champions here, but the one issue that one noticed 2.5 years ago, or three, I think Honourable Hadebe may well have been there at the time, was in, I forget, somewhere in the Western Cape here, Atlantis, where, you know, one found people at a kind of senior level, the sort of briefcase and suited crowd, but really no understanding whatsoever of the field, none also thinking of the larger ones as well. Thank you, Minister.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'll take some of the questions. Let me just start off by the question on consumer protection in its different versions that this was asked here. And I should probably just say that the reason why consumer protection was not consulted in the Walmart transaction was because the Walmart transaction took the form of a merger, which was dealt with under the competition regulator. There would have been no other regulatory matters that were required in terms of that transaction other than the merger control, which was handled by the competition authority. So I think that was the reason for that. And I think that we have indicated on a number of occasions why, as the DTI, we were involved in that. I mean, exactly because I think the judge put it in an excellent way, that there are international value chains. Retailers have played major roles in determining production conditions in individual countries. This is not a transaction, given that it's involving the largest retailer in the world, that was going to have no impact on the South African economy, and therefore it was incumbent, and this is what the judge said, that adequate account is given of that before we decide on any remedies which are going to benefit local production in the country. And so there is this order of the court that we should be appointing a research panel, which has got a very tight time frame to go back to the court, and then it will decide a variation on the order of the 100 million to support local supply development. So I think that's the story on the Walmart matter. More generally on the Consumer Commission, of course we are in support of a Consumer Commission following the precepts of the National Consumer Act and robustly doing its work to support and protect consumers. We've also engaged with the Consumer Commission, and I've indicated a few ways in which I think in the framework of breaking down silos, if some of our different agencies were working more closely together, we could achieve some important results. Somebody mentioned, I think it was the Honourable Khadevi, was the question of paraffin stoves in squatter camps. And it seems to me that here is a real opportunity, because where every now and again the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications has what they call a destruction event, and I've been to a few of these, and they run a bulldozer, or what do you call it, a roller, over all kinds of goods, non-compliant goods, and always among those are these stoves, paraffin stoves, the kind of thing that falls down, causes a fire in the squatter camp. And so I've been saying, yes, we must continue to act like this, but the Consumer Act says that anybody who supplies those is also culpable, and it goes right up the supply chain. So if we go to a squatter camp and we say to people, don't buy the substandard stove, and the substandard stove is sold at a lower price, we're not going to win anything, because people are going to make a price decision. But if it falls over and it causes a fire, the supplier is culpable under the Consumer Act, as is everybody else down the line. And I think if we got the two agencies working closely together, we could begin to hit an issue like that. But of course, the commissioner is required to act independently, and I think the commissioner must come and account to you for what work they've been doing and how they've been doing that. As far as the budget is concerned, the increases that we've had, we're not exempt from the haircuts, by the way. That's the one point I wanted to make. The increases that we have had have been a deliberate decision by government that we need to put more support into productive activities in the country, and that the main increase is the MCEP. So this money is going to not come to support hotel meetings or conferences by the DTI. It's not coming there. Everyone else has got to take a haircut. We've got to take a haircut as well. And I think the question of how we budget is an important one. Every agency, every department has to submit a proposal which is then put through the budgetary process.
not everybody gets everything they want. Even we didn't get everything we want for the MCEP. You know, we could do with more. We could do if we were suddenly given an additional 40, 50 million rand, I could find lots of things to use it for in programs in the DTI. So through that process, a decision was taken that there would be the following allocation to the National Consumer Commission. It's not us as the DTI that reached that decision. That was the collective decision of the government through the budgetary process. Now, I understand, and I just want to come up with a motion and all of that. I would want to say the following. I understand the process now. Parliament has approved the fiscal framework. That means that if you want to vote that you want to increase the budget for the National Consumer Commission, you must then take the money off somebody else. Now, I would want to say to you that if you do that, look very carefully what they have done with the budget up to now, what kind of financial controls they have had in place, and then, on the basis of that, engage with us, and we will come in robustly and discuss when you're going to take it, if you're going to take it off our budget, and I'm sure if you can take it off somebody else's budget, they're going to have the same thing. That's the process that we're going to go in for. It's not us that have made that determination. That's been the outcome, the collective outcome. And I would ask that this be, if you want, a rigorous piece of work that looks at least at that. What did they get? What did they spend the money on? What is the state of their financial management? And what is the state of the plan that they have before you make any decisions? And compare that with anything else. And I think we can have that debate out in some detail. And I think that's the way we need to go further forward. We are not against more resources for consumer protection. We think that is important. There's also another question, and that is the role of provinces in this. There's supposed to be a relationship of that sort. Let me say on the cooperative question, which again I'm going to talk the various aspects of co-ops. The Honourable Mabaso is dead right. Co-ops need not be small. Co-ops can be big or small. What defines a co-op is it is a different form of enterprise. That's what it is. The problem that we have had up to now is we've treated it as a subset of small business and very much the afterthought of small business. The new legislation, which will be coming your way quite soon, I hope, is trying to rectify that, put in place a cooperative-specific support program. It's gone through a lot of consultation. It's gone through a lot of discussion in NEDLAC and so on, and we're putting that forward. It will also do some other things. It will bring the Cooperative Act into line with the broad architecture of the Companies Act, and things like audited statements and a version of business rescue and things like that, which is coming in. But I think you will find that's what we're trying to do. And I think it's absolutely correct, the point that everybody's made, that cooperatives in South Africa are not where they should be. You can go to a country like Kenya, which I did once. I went to the deputy president and we went to see a dairy cooperative, which was quite a sizable enterprise. And there was a lesson. The farmers producing the milk were not cooperativized. The agro-processing industry, the dairy that produced the cheese, the butter, and the yogurt, was a cooperative. That's also the experience of South Africa among commercial farmers in the pre-94 period. The KWV was a cooperative that made the wine. The grape farmers were not cooperativized. Now, agro-processing around the world is an obvious area. I mentioned that already. We're talking, for example, in the Industrial Policy Action Plan about small mills, a new technology that you can grind maize to a high standard with a new technology. Now, some of that must be susceptible to cooperativization. And there are other things of that sort. So that's what I was trying to say about breaking down silos. We have a support agency, but let's also try to get people working in agro-processing, which is happening, actually, to identify areas where cooperatives could be a form that... is very susceptible. And I went last year. I went to the International Cooperatives Day. We were in East London, and actually you'll be quite amazed. Although the numbers and the figures are telling us one story, when you actually see products that are produced by cooperatives under very difficult conditions, you'll be quite amazed at what people can do. I mean, I think there was one woman that was doing clothing design in Butterworth. I mean, everyone knows Butterworth as an incredibly depressed area. You know, high quality stuff that was on sale there, they've been in existence for 10 years. They are around in South Africa. Opportunities, I think, that we can identify, and that's what we want to try to do. I informed the IP Bill, just informed now that the DG can give more instructions, is in the hands of the Parliamentary Law Advisor, who had to, I think, develop another language version of it, and it's on its way to the Presidency, so it'll be, that's where it's at in terms of the process. Let me just say on the issue of the iron and steel task team, there are two forms of iron ore in South Africa. The one is the most valuable resource is the resource in the incision, which is the line from Sishen to Saldanha and the large number of coaches that go up and down that line. That's the one resource. The other resource, which is actually bigger but lower grade, is byproducts of other activities, other mining activities. For example, there's a dump outside Palabor which has got large deposits of iron ore in it. And that is actually, there's larger quantities of that. That second is the subject of quite a lot of work that's going on with the IDC and some negotiations that are going on for the introduction of what's called mini mill technology to turn that into steel. And I think that's one part of the equation. What we need in South Africa is we need more than one steel maker in South Africa. That's one part of the equation. But we also need to make sure that we do get the benefits out of the resource that's at Sishen, the high value added resource. I think you can take it for granted that the process of infrastructural development that was announced around that line will not be indifferent to the question of trying to ensure that we have a sizable part of that overall resource available at a discounted price to support steel manufacturing, and with the expectation that that is passed on. The formula that we're working on is what we've understood, the deal that was struck at the unbundling of ISCOR, that was that 21.4% must be available at cost plus 3%. We continue to work to try to achieve that. There are some delicate processes and negotiations that are going to be happening in the near future, but we are still seeking that as a fundamental objective. Let me just say that I would also want to say that the question of avoided under expenditure is fundamental. I mean, that's why we are making sure that the MCEP work by TIO has been completed, so that when come April the 1st, we don't have to say, now we're going to design an incentive. We've known this is going to be happening for some time before it was announced in the budget, so we've been doing the work to make sure that it can be rolled out, and absolutely we don't want to see any reductions. Any under expenditures there. The film, I'm glad a few colleagues mentioned the film incentives. I had the opportunity, the very first time I ever went to a film set, I saw that it was in Mariesburg where the other safe house was, and I saw them film one of the fight scenes there. But I also, just to tell you a little anecdote, they showed me it was a very short shot of it. There was a sort of bit in there which was full of guns and radios and things like that. And I said to the director of the film, I said, well, I sincerely hope that this is the only such facility in South Africa. We don't have these CIA safe houses dotted around. And his response was, I can neither confirm nor deny. So but anyway, the point, I'm just the Honourable Albert, one of the things we're trying to do in some of these film things is get the DTI credits not at the end, but at the beginning of the film. But movie and cleaning up for the next movie. And if you had been in there, you would have seen that there was an Afrikaans coach who is actually a quite well-known Cape Town actor. So there was a coach for Ryan Reynolds. He didn't just pick it up. But in any case, the important point I want to make about this is that I concur with this, and we've done quite a bit of effort. What we've done is we've tried to stretch the package in certain ways, and precisely because of the point that was made by the Honourable Khadebe, we did it in this film because it shows South Africa not as masquerading, Cape Town masquerading, pretending to be San Francisco or something, but Cape Town being Cape Town. We decided we would go for that because it is an opportunity to project the country. The original script, by the way, was going to be in Rio de Janeiro, and it was Cape Town is Cape Town. So that was what we did. We're also looking for, I mean, there are films and some films around which are major iconic stories of our own. I don't want to describe the film, you all know the film, but you know, those sorts of things as well that are major historical, culturally significant films, we also stretch ourselves on that. And the third one is that we need to realize the film industry as an industry, not just the film and the artistic part, but all the back work that goes into that. And there's another one we're in discussion with, and this is about bringing some of the computer stuff for Skyfy, you know, so that you see some of that work, that work into South Africa. So those are the things we try to do. We try to deepen the presence of the film industry and tailor our support in that sort of a way. So these are the things we want to do. Move away from locations pretending to be something else. Also support moving into the industrial activity around the films. And I think that incentive has been very successful. In fact, if you're not in this game, you're not in the film business. That's the truth. I mean, it's like the motor investments, the competing locations. They're all looking for these sorts of things. So we have to get involved, and we try their criteria, and these are things done on objective discussion. Some of the other questions about the tooling initiative and the improvements in conditions of service, I think is exactly what you said it is. It's the salary increases. But I think that I'll let the other people talk about that. The Honourable Funder Merva asked about the North-South Corridor. In fact, the President is not the SADC champion, he's the AU champion of that. So he's the champion of various infrastructure projects across the African continent have been identified as priorities. This is one, and then a certain head of state has made the champion of those, and this is our President is of that one. Now, this has been going for some time, and the issue that we've been trying to grapple with is most of the projects are happening outside of South Africa. About 80 odd projects that are taking place. There will be some part of it that does start to affect us, and those are things like Bike Bridge. The success they're trumpeting at this point is the Chirundu border post between Zambia and Zimbabwe, where a combination of hard infrastructure and administrative improvements has reduced the time to cross that border post quite dramatically. In the case of Bike Bridge, hard infrastructure is absolutely necessary. There's a one-way flow of traffic across that bridge. We need a two-way flow of traffic. But I think the minister that's responsible for this under the President is actually Minister Manuel. Let me just say one other thing that we are working quite energetically on as a department is the Trans-Kuneni Spatial Development Initiative. The latest I hear is our colleagues in Angola will be ready to engage with us on this at ministerial level, probably about April or May. But this would be a connection which goes through Angola, through Namibia, and then connects up with the Trans-Kalahari. Now, you know, when I went to Namibia, to Angola recently for the SADC meeting, I used my little observation, how many ships are outside the port of Luanda? Because you know, export industries have been to the port outside, and it's all the trade outside of the region. If we're really going to build intra-regional trade, we actually also need to build road and rail connections, and those can be the basis on which we spin off industrial development. So that's a very, very strategically important SDI for us. There has been a discussion about codes of good practice in Africa. I think we've not been taking this up very actively recently. Maybe somebody can report on whether I'm wrong about that. But I have been supportive of that idea, that big investors tell us, well, they've got their brand at stake. And that's correct. I mean, you know, you're MultiChoice or something like that, or you're ShopRite Checkers, okay, fine. But whether you like it or not, you carry another brand, and maybe South Africa. And if some South African company, fly-by-night operation, maybe does something bad, like, you know, bringing date stamp expired produce or something like that, the whole reputation of South Africa is at stake. So I think that we do want to encourage that, and I think our general thrust is towards that, but I don't know if any further work has been done on this. I think the question of I think I've answered most of the cooperatives on incubators and standalone. I think really we like partnerships. We've been saying the overall objective is to reach about 250 incubators. For that we need partnerships. But I think what we're doing is we're going out ourselves. Look, sometimes you have partnerships with other bodies. I mean, they can be things like universities and things like that. There was one outside Pretoria, which was like that. But sometimes, very often, the ones that we want are when you get big businesses working actively to develop suppliers themselves. That they've decided they want local suppliers, and that they work actively to build those local suppliers. And there are a few of those in South Africa, and I think some of those are some of the best programs we have. Some we work with those, we support those as well, but we've got too few of them. So I think we need to take our as I said already, 28 are actively under consideration right now, which is quite an increase on the 31 which we've had up to now. Quite a big increase. Gender empowerment, pity that Deputy Minister Tabet is not here, because that is an area that she's championed. Quite a lot of restructuring going on in women's empowerment. I think the argument would be that without the specific focus on women, as is the case with this, without the specific focus on youth, it just tends to be, it doesn't happen. There are a number of proposals underway. I mean, I think somebody else can talk about that. And then the entities, do they do their own thing or they work according to government priorities? Well, we engage with them and try to bring them into alignment. But as I said before, many of them operate under ACTA as opposed to act independently or whatever, and it's all we can do is moral persuasion in that regard. And then you yourselves, Parliament, you must be part of the oversight of that. I said already that where we have problems of mismanagement and things like that and funny tenders and stuff like that, they are not in the DTI. They are in the agency. That's why we are putting in place new firewalls and saying that we don't want to just have to deal with a contract or a tender that's been awarded when it becomes a problem. We want to know beforehand so that we're able to make sure that we don't have the problems. I'll hand over to the DG and the rest to allocate to the rest of the team as well.
Thanks. I think the minister has covered most of the issues, and I'll just cover one or two areas, and then my colleagues will go into specific details. I think just agreed on the question of budget for consumers. And the only point to add is, in terms of as the accounting officer, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, one must be sure that the controls and financial skills must be calibrated with the budget allocation. And as I said, in terms of the Consumer Commission, they have not significantly. I mean, as we get to the end of the financial year, where they will basically spend their budget. But really, the issue that has been a concern for us that all agencies, they must put in place under the PFMA proper financial systems, independent audit committees, proper skilled staff to be able to spend that budget and so on. So I think it's always important just to see that those things are calibrated with regard to spending. I think my colleague Nimrod will deal with the Insimbi scheme, and I think the ministers covered most of the other points. Just on Mr. Albert's question on the legal metrology, we will be hopefully by August, after going through cabinet, we will be presenting to introducing to Parliament. And as you know, currently the Legal Metrology Act of 1973, it covers mainly weights and measurements. That is, what is a kilogram, what is a millimeter, and so on. But now we need to modernize that legislation to go into areas like measuring environmental impact, health and safety, and so on. So it would be just extending the scope of the Metrology Act. But as I said, we will be giving a full presentation, the draft bill. Quite a work has been done on the draft bill, but as I said, we will go through those processes. And then just with regard to the regulatory impact assessments, as I said, all of our legislation, as part of the process of developing it, we look at the regulatory impact and so on. I think my colleague Sarah Chwani will maybe just lay out some of our internship and mentorship programs and look at that. I think that, yes, Mr. Mabasa, I think that you've mentioned, and that's why I think you can see we've paid some attention to the issue of management. We need to retain and attract skilled staff to be able to manage the resources, which is growing in terms of the DTI, and that's why I think the development of a core management core is key to our work, so we're giving that much attention. And I think just finally, Honourable Chair, on your question about women-owned enterprises, I think as you can see throughout our work, we're sort of trying to not look at the sort of the politics of business, but really getting real entrepreneurship going. So the women's program, like the cooperatives, is to really stimulate the women entrepreneurs and then provide support on two sides. On the supply side, to provide incentives, technical support, financial support, but then most especially on the demand side, to be able to ensure that women-owned enterprises are also integrated into supply chains and so on. So in terms of our the focus of our gender and women's empowerment program is really about entrepreneurship and for women. I think I'll just hand over then to my colleague Strad.
Thanks, Chair DG. Just very briefly, the Insimbi Tooling Initiative is in essence a skills development program to help redevelop the skills base in the tooling industry, which is absolutely critical for manufacturing competitiveness because it produces the underlying capital equipment that makes like dies and molds that makes the componentry that goes into final products. Essentially what it does is it supports in conjunction with the National Skills Fund, skills centers, and the necessary curriculum to rebuild the tooling skills capability in South Africa. And more broadly, we believe that it can provide us with some lessons on how we expand our interaction with the skills system and look at rolling out skills centres together with the NSF in a range of other sectors.
Thank you. Sarah Chwani.
Thanks, DG Chair and honourable members. The issue around the internship program, we have basically embedded this in our department. We've got a rolling plan as we speak. We have 53 interns. And basically, this is not the number that we had when we started at the beginning of the financial year, because when the program or the contract comes to an end, obviously they would leave the department, exit the department. In April, on the 3rd, we will be welcoming 71 interns again, so the 53 add on the 71 and also 10 learners. So we use this also as a feeder into absorbing or creating our own capacity or growing our own trees, as it were. So we have really a very robust program. become key in taking our action planning program forward. Thank you.
Then I think on some of the financial, the budget issues, our group CFO.
Thanks, Chair. I thought I'll comment on the spending of the department. I think last year was a unique year, and I think our automotive incentive scheme actually impacted on that largely. But just to say that over 60% of our budget relates to incentives, and we're largely dependent on external people to submit the claims. But what we found is that in certain areas, the claims are excessive, in other areas, they're more or less than we expect. So what we are doing now, we are managing that budget around the incentives. And we manage our budget on a daily, weekly, and a monthly basis. As of February this year, we are underspent by less than 2%. So we're projecting at financial year and less than 2%. And next year it will be the same trend, hopefully. Then with respect to the increase and decrease in the budget in administration, let me just say that when the MTEF was done, a directive was issued, that you will take a haircut across the department. And the department consciously chose to take that haircut largely in administration rather than the service delivery divisions in the immediate year. And then the other area that actually impacted on the decrease in the next financial year was lots of our leases were coming to an end around photocopying machines and those kind of things. Our capital had reduced substantially, and then obviously we took a huge haircut around our administration costs, the other administration costs.
But we do just have one or two small follow-ups here, or perhaps additional ones. Honourable Kadebe had his hand up first, and then Honourable Jordan Phil Lewis, and then Honourable Wilmot James, in that order. Just looking all around me now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. What I'll go to now, I'll follow on the footsteps, although it's very rare. I'm following on the footsteps of Honorable Louis on the issue of communication in particular. I have a serious problem here. The constitution of the country enjoins us that we must transform all the sectors of society, socially, economically, militarily, whatever way, we must transform that. And then one way of, we know that historically disadvantaged people were excluded in the economy of the country. The black BEE is actually one of the tools which I used to try to de-racialize the economy. But what is critical here is that it is badly received all over. There are aspirations around that. So is it because of the failure of communications like in the DTI that it is not communicated properly? We know that there are issues of tenderfinance, but not all the people are tenderfinance. Why is it not communicated so well that this thing is a constitutional imperative? We must deracialize the economy. Part of deracializing the economy is to ensure that the historically disadvantaged people gain access to the levers of power within the economic sector. Number two, Chairperson, is the issue of what we had during the public hearings of gambling, then the African horse sickness. Our people in the horsing industry, they cannot export their horses because of that disease, then. But a country like Australia, which has got the worst disease than African horse disease, is able to export that, then. So in the international fora, that's like the WTO, whatever, are we really getting benefits from joining those forums so that we are also able to defend our commodities? Ne? I can make another example, Chair. China itself, as it says now, is the largest consumer of red meat. When I ask, I don't know whether it was in the DTI or in the other forum, because I also serve in international relations somewhere, that our meat cannot go to China because of we cannot declare South Africa as food and mouth free country. We cannot have that declaration. But other countries are able to export their products although they've got these diseases. What is it which the department is doing to ensure that our entrepreneurs really they get a chance in the world? the last one, Chairperson, I really appreciate the issue, that one of helping the SME so that their goods are made to be demanded by the consumer. What I'd like to ask, are they linked when you take the various businesses abroad, like in the Shanghai Pavilion, whatever, are these SMEs or historical disadvantaged enterprises taken on board under Kulariga? Because I think it should be best that when you link them with an outside, with an export market, their products will be guaranteed, let's say over a period of 5 years, the product will be sold at a particular market. I think that's one way of growing them up. I'll end up, I'll not go more, but we'll get them the other time. I'll just give another one a chance. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Right. Just one quick question before I get to the NCC. I haven't been able to find any allocation for the Saldana IDZ in here. I may have missed it. There is quite a lot of detail. But I'd appreciate it if you could point it out to me. Then on the NCC, Minister, I appreciate your commitment to have a rigorous discussion. I would like to take you up on that. I believe that the NCC does far too vital work simply to say that the financial controls are not good enough. They are very frank and honest about that as a problem in here. And as a department, you need to help them to fix those things, and as a committee, we need to make sure that we oversee and make sure those things are fixed. But they do critical work. They're already in their first year, have taken on some big companies and have scored some major victories for consumers. And, you know, again, I put it to you, it's an issue of priorities. I've just done a quick exercise. Your department, through its programs, is spending roughly 130 million rand on travel and accommodation and venue hire. You're spending, as I said, 76.3 million rand on communications, and yet you've allocated 42 million rand to the National Consumer Commission. We heard in this committee that they can barely afford to pay for their software licenses. I would put it to you that it's difficult to comply with the complexities of the Public Finance Management Act when the copy of Microsoft Excel that you're using is illegal. So we need to look at the budgetary constraints in that commission and capacitate them to do the work that they need to do. And again, I follow from Honourable Khedebe, we seem to be speaking to each other today, who was talking about the same point about SABS, and I agree with that. We can't have such an important organization and then not give them the money necessary to do their job to the fullest extent. So I would like to take you up on that offer, Minister. I think they need more money.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill-Lewis, Honourable Walmart-James.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to return to the Walmart issue and in terms of consumer protection. And this is how I see it, and I pose it again as a question. Here comes international retail capital big time, right? Walmart. And what it wants to do is get into the South African Africa market by acquiring Massmart. It passes the hurdle to the Competition Commission. And after the fact, we have three departments of government challenge it and try to place conditions on this effort at a transaction. Now, there are two questions that are actually quite big. The first is it what is the signal to the international investor community? Is that in this country, if you go to South Africa, you pass the initial hurdle, important hurdle, and after the fact, government tries to check it. Now, who would want to do that as a foreign investor? The message is South Africa does a roundabout face. That's the first thing. The second is in whose interest does the DTI act? Does it act on the basis on behalf of organized labor? Does it act on behalf of organized business? Does it act on the basis of the needs of the consumers? I mean, whose interest does this department serve in the case of this quite big issue? Thank you
very much, Honourable Wilmot James. I thought I very short one there. Am I correct on Norma Barker?
Yes, it's 1.5 short. The one question, Comrade Chair, is what is the degree of working together between the three spheres of government in industrialization? Because if that doesn't happen in a very coordinated way, we may find that we miss and repeat certain things, and then we don't gain properly in terms of economies of scale. And but the same question also goes with regard to going national. To what degree do we have that under our conscious effort of going to those former homeland areas, and also consciously going to what used to be industrial parks? I just want to give some examples here. We have MDME Industrial Park in Soweto, as well as Orlando Industrial Park, because there, in those industrial parks, there lies an opportunity of taking those businesses, those manufacturing businesses, a step higher. Because they are already established, they already know the basics of manufacturing and doing business. But in terms of closing this gap between the rich or big business, which is mostly white, and small business, which is mostly black, in the black meaning Indian, colored, and Africans. So those are very critical to these industrial parks. And then the last one, do we have in the budget, do we have adequate budgeting for communicating, for an example, when we talk of cooperatives, small businesses, we have enough budget to communicate that? Because we can have it at our level, but if we don't have, if we don't invest enough in terms of taking it all over the country, we may end up with a biased economy. And we must always ask ourselves this question: to what degree do we go to what used to be former homelands? To what degree do we go to informal settlement areas? But another difficult challenge is that with some of these small businesses, we also have to go to them. We must not always believe that it is their duty to come to us because they need us. But we must also go to them for the reason that some of them are coming to a conclusion that the government is a talk show. And once they come to that conclusion, you find we don't necessarily attract them to the workshops. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Right. Thank you very much. Minister, DG, I just wanted to check with you. You made a reference to the high cost of capital for productive sectors as one of the challenges. And quite clearly, as you already noted, it is a challenge. You are busy developing certain measures in that regard. What we'd like to do, and I would like to congratulate you on being higher than the required percentage of 2% for disability. I just hope it isn't what I would call disability like myself, because I suppose I could qualify for that, and that we have something a little bit more deeper than what I've got is, you know. So I just hope so. Right. But having said that, I want to suggest that we have 10 minutes to respond, and then what we don't get through, can we please come back in writing before Tuesday? I hope that allows, I mean, these are all things you have on the top of your head. Thanks.
be quick myself and then hand over to the DG and anybody else. I think that the question of the Honourable Khamiri was beginning to raise why we have a communications department in the DTI. It's not because there's lots of advertisements, and I can't remember when there last was one in the mainstream newspapers with my picture in or anything like that. We have to go out and take DTI products out to the disadvantaged communities and areas. And a lot of money goes into that. A lot of the communications money is how do we solicit views on different pieces of legislation as we are going around now with, for example, the SEZ bill as we did with the BE bill and so on. So when, and I'm going to make a few comments just in a minute, but when we come to back again to where the money is going to come from in the DTI budget, I would just say to you that, let's look at the opportunity costs of some of these things. I think the Honourable Khanev is also right about our quest is about deracializing this economy. And when we make comments about tenderpreneurs and things like that, that doesn't mean that we say we don't need to bother about that. The President has said, and this is one of our challenges, where are the black manufacturers? That's what we need. So we are not going slow on trying to transform and bring about empowerment. We're trying to do it in ways that will build real capacities of people, even people who have been beneficiaries of deals, and this is what the legislation that we're bringing is about, have been given a contract, and they signed a contract, and they thought they were getting this and this and this, but it's a little bit akin to tax evasion, tax avoidance. Actually, the small print means that you don't get it. And that's the issue that we're putting up in terms of complex fronting. So I think we're trying to do that, to try to support the development of real capacity and entrepreneurship among people. And that, I think that, when we take people on trade promotion activities, we do, I think, most of our delegations are pretty representative, actually, of the population. But the real issue is that we need people that are going to benefit from those. So we have programs to support people to become export ready and stuff like that. I think that's the way we need to go about it, is that way. On the issues you raised on the African horse sickness, in fact, you were having your hearing right when we were in the state visit in the United Arab Emirates. And I raised the matter. We raised it. It was a proposal that came from the horse industry that the quarantine would be there. I can't remember the name of the place in the United Arab Emirates. They've got a proposal from a particular place. We transmitted it to our colleagues and said they would look at it. But I think the broader question, though, is that these issues of phytosanitary measures are, in fact, very much part of the trade negotiations. There are tons of them. Every country you come to, there's one or other issue around these. And sometimes they're in place because of real reasons, and sometimes they're in place as a trade barrier. We are trying to, in context of some of our negotiations with some of our fellow developing countries, try to address some of these things on a complementary basis. Not say we it's a bridge too far to try to pull down the entire edifice. But for example, with Brazil, we're in the process. As a technical teams are going to meet very soon. It's got a nice little phrase. It's called wine for swine. And what there is there's a series of registration requirements for South African wine in Brazil, which means that it takes a huge amount of time and effort to get it into the Mercosur market, and very little wine is sold in Mercosur. And in return, they are complaining about our own phytosanitary regulations around pork. So we've got a discussion and a trade-off going. And sometimes you raise these things unilaterally and you get somewhere. But you see, trade negotiations are not any longer just about tariffs. They're about, you win a tariff concession. In fact, we're a little bit naked. This is the truth. Is you get a we give a tariff concession, you're here. You get a tariff concession somewhere else. There's probably a phytosanitary measure, there's a standard in place, there's another tax in place, there's a this in place, and now that in place. And we're trying to look at these things in a much more holistic way. In fact, as tariffs come down, these other things go up. And it's not just in developing countries, or even particularly, look at the European Union's REACH legislation, chemical registration legislation, not just the chemical industry, but the mining industry. Every single product has to be registered. There's an issue. which I think I might have shared with this committee already, I have just verified it's a significant matter still, where supermarkets in a European country are saying that in the interest of saving carbon, they will no longer permit bottled wine. It will now have to go in bulk. And let me just tell you what we are thinking of doing if we can't resolve this one. Tit for tat. There's whiskey and gin and other things that come. It'll be tit for tat. They can send this stuff out. I don't know what, in what, but you know, but that will be the basis on which we respond to that. Yeah, okay, come in cardboard boxes. That's a good idea. Then I think there is some funding which could support the Saldana IDZ, but the big issue which we identified in the SEZ bill is there's no dedicated fund to support special economic zones. It's an ad hoc budget allocation, and so we're saying that within the framework of the SEZ bill that can be something we can address more comprehensively. Let me just say that, of course, as the department under whom the NCC falls, we want the NCC to work as an effective institution. We want the NCC to be taking up a range of issues referred to by consumers, but also I think there's some strategic interventions it could make. I mentioned the question of paraffin stoves. We want it to be properly capacitated. But as I said to you before, the question of you know, it's not just that the DTI gets a sum of money and then the DTI sits down and says, this goes to that one, that goes to that one, that goes to that one. It doesn't work like that. Every entity has to actually make a budget submission, and the budget allocation goes through a process. That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying, look very carefully at all of these things, and then you've got a gut reaction. I've already said, if you were to take the money off communications and give it to the NCC, then don't come to us and tell us, well, you didn't consult on this or that, you didn't go out to this area, you didn't go and take the message up. Then, you know, there are choices. There are things that travel and accommodation. Well, travel and accommodation. We don't go to the SACU meeting. We don't go to SADC. We don't go to the WTO. We don't do trade promotion. I think those are the things that we're going to have to face. Though there are choices and there are priorities. But I think that we should certainly find an opportunity, if that is where the committee wants to go, not where Mr. Yalouz, if that's where the committee wants to go, then we can find an opportunity, you can meet with the entities, and we can discuss these matters in some detail. That would be fine from my point of view. Then on the Walmart matter. Well, you know, I think that there's a very profound question which Mr. James is asking in his second question. Who does the DTI represent? Where are we coming in? Is it consumers, organized labor? We don't as a department represent organized labor. Our priority, in accordance with what we have identified in IPAP and the new growth path, is we are about sustainable, decent work creation in South Africa. That's what it's about, and in particular, we are about supporting value-added activities and manufacturing. That's what it's about. We indicated at the first version of IPAP 2 that the problem with the growth path that South Africa was on before the recession was that the productive sectors in the economy were growing half the rate of the consumption-driven sectors. That you were having wholesale, retail, trade, financial services, and whatever were growing twice as fast as agriculture, mining, and manufacturing. We said, that is not a developmental growth path. We need to change that. So when we look at things, we look at it from the point of view, what does this mean for productive activity in our country, and what does it mean for small business development in our country? That's what we approached the Walmart transaction. Those were the guiding principles. Now, I said, I think that the judge has made a very, very important ruling. The judge has said that, fine, there's a process that I identify. There's a competition commission. The competition commission makes a decision. A competition commission decision is subject to review by the competition tribunal and by the competition appeal court. All those things are written in. Now, if Let's say the merging parties weren't happy with the decision of the Competition Commission. Would anybody have had a scream and a yell if they had appealed to the Competition Tribunal and the Competition Appeal Court? I doubt if anyone would have said that's their right. That's their right. That's what the process is. So we come in and we say the Competition Commission made a mistake. We went to the Competition Tribunal. The judge in the Competition Appeal Court said all they did was they took the proposal of the companies without interrogating some very fundamental issues, which is what we are talking about. This is not going to be a transaction which is the same as a company that wants to come and invest in agro-processing in South Africa. This is not. This is the world's biggest retailer with established international value chains, which have huge implications, as the judge said, for productive sectors in the country. That's what he said. And he said that was not properly aired, that was not properly considered by the authorities that made the judgment earlier on, and therefore there's a case to revise what the Competition Tribunal did, the 100 million rand. He said that's what it is. But that's got to be based on evidence, and the court itself will interact with that. Now, I think that's an eminently sensible route, which, by the way, it seems that the Walmart, the merging party, is also happy with, to engage in that process. Now, I think that I've said repeatedly, this is not a generalizable statement about foreign investment. It so happens that we're talking about two foreign-owned companies, because Massmart had a majority foreign shareholder anyway. So it's two foreign-owned entities. And the reason for public interest considerations coming in is because of the nature of the transaction. It's transaction-specific. Many countries, Canada, Australia, they have bodies that foreign investments have to apply to. They decide this is strategic, that's not. We don't have anything like that. The competition authorities were the route that this came up. I think that we've said repeatedly, if it was two South African companies, two South African owned companies, the same issues would come up. It's to do with the nature of the transaction. Now, has there been a discourse around which has tried to say what you said, that you're sending negative signals to foreign investors? Yes, there has. The press has been full of that. So we have got a piece of work to do to explain that it's not that. It's not a statement. We are working energetically with millions and millions, well, not millions, but tons and tons of foreign investors in all sorts of other ways. I think that's the point I would say. And unambiguously and unapologetically, when we have to prioritize interests, we prioritize the DTI in favor of the productive sectors, in favor of manufacturing, in favor of small business and productive activity. That's what we do. That is our priority. And I don't apologize for that at all. It's not a question of, consumers and whatever. Because what about if all the consumers are unemployed? We can suck in tons and tons of imports and have all productive activities replaced by imports, but everyone may be unemployed. And we can have the finest consumer legislation in the world, but it's not going to do us much good because we won't have the wherewithal to buy anything. I think that's the issue. I think I'll leave it at that point. Let the DG come in. You did save 10 minutes. I don't know if I've taken it all, but anyway.
I'll take the last good minute then, not the 10. Thank you. I think the minister's covered everything. If I can just very quickly cover three areas. The one is Ms. Khadebe's point about the health and safety and the challenges we faced with our ostrich meat, with our red meat and so on. Just to say that this obviously is the remit of the Department of Agriculture with regard to having the health inspectors and so on in terms of our meeting those standards. But our agro-processing unit in DTI is working very actively with agriculture around these health and safety phytosanitary standards. And I think what is in the pipeline is the idea of a specialized food agency, as they have in other jurisdictions, to look at seeing that your products meet the sort of world standards on that. With regard to the Saldanha IDZ, I think the minister alluded to that. Under the general allocation of SEZ, you will see we were given 500 million for this year, 750 million, and then 1 billion rand in the third year for SEZ. So it will be under those allocations that we will fund the feasibility studies and some of the initial programs for the IDZ. In addition to that, also, we hope in the bill, if it's passed, that we will also have a dedicated SEZ fund from which incentives, which will be exclusively for IDZs and SEZs, we will have that fund. I think, and then just finally, Mr. Mabasa's point about the three tiers of government, I think there's two areas where we cover. Firstly, in the SEZ legislation, that defines the roles and responsibilities and the cooperation between all three tiers of government. And that is precisely the reason for why we needed legislation for the SEZ, because, as I said, you must have the buy-in of the metro or the municipality, province and national working jointly on SEZ. So that's there. And then secondly, under the procurement, as you know, the new procurement regulations, we cover not only the national level, but we also cover the metros, and we cover provinces, and we cover SOEs under the designations. And so in that way, we're using, for example, bus transport is really done at the metro level or at the provincial level. And so those things, as I said, we will now designate that for local production. So I think that's how we utilize the three tiers. And I think just to finally, Madam Chair, on your point about the cost of capital, part of the IFAP you will see when we come in April, with the new version of IFAP, we will be addressing that issue of industrial financing. But we still do face that challenge of very high cost of capital this country. Thank you.
No, GG, there may well be one or two other little ones outstanding, but we work very well on coming back with some written responses. But I do want to thank you, GG. The Minister will still be staying with us, also with you for that matter, but also Mr. Naidu, Ms. Jodie Schultz, Mr. Zikordo, Mr. Zulk, Mr. Chipfupa, Ms. Chwani, Ms. Verhoorsen, and Mr. Zimela for all being here with us. You may not have had to respond now, but rest assured there will be other questions coming to you, and we will require you to have listened in to the concerns that have been raised here today. But time is not the friend of this committee. So, and I know the committee will understand when I say a working tea break, meaning 5 minutes comfort break, grab your tea and a little platter or plate, and then come back. Try to refrain from interviews at this point so that not for any other reason other than time